studying the books in the New Testament this year. So we'll come back and finish our series with Revelation early next January, probably the second week, I think, making it exactly 1 year from when we started. And then we'll see what we move on to after that. Tonight's lesson is two books, 2nd and 3rd John. We went over 1st John last week. And I've said many times tonight that we're going to do many times over the course of the series that we're going to do something you've probably never done before, and that is read a book of the Bible completely in a lesson. But tonight we're actually going to do something I'm sure you've never done before, and that's read two. So we are going to start by kind of looking at some overview material that goes with both books, and then we're going to focus on 2 John, and then we're going to jump to 3 John and get some application out of both of them at the end. Who wrote these books? Well, 2 and 3 John were written by the Apostle John. This is attested to in the early church fathers' writing. They claimed that John indeed wrote these books. But apart from their testimony, there really is no other statement given in the books themselves, except that the person who is writing calls himself the elder. Now, this would not refer to the role of a church elder being equivalent to a pastor or a bishop or somebody in authority in a church necessarily. Now, John very well might have been that in a church at some point if he wasn't when he wrote these. But more than likely, it refers to an older man who spoke with authority based on his age. And one reason we kind of lean towards that is that the definite article, the, indicates that there is a specific person being spoken about, kind of like John is claiming it as his own title. And since John was probably one of the last writing apostles, probably one of the last apostles alive, that would kind of indicate that he was an elder not only in age, but also in the traditions of the church, the new church, and therefore entitled to respect in that position. When did he write? Well, as with 1 John, there is no way to date these two epistles based solely on their content. There are no date indicators in the book themselves. However, we do have traditions that say John was writing in Ephesus as late as AD 90s, but these are based on assumptions or traditions. They are attempts to date the book, the books, rather. So, as we are going to see a little bit later, I think the date of AD 70 to AD 100 is still very likely, just like they were for 1 John. And we'll see kind of my guess as to how these three books relate together. But for right now, let's move right into 2 John. 2 John, the subtitle for this book, Demonstrations of Love. And in this short letter, the Apostle John is briefly restating the concepts that he taught in 1 John. To whom was the book written? 2 John was written to the elect lady and her children in verse 1. Now, we're not going to actually read these verses now because, as I said, we're going to read the whole book. So we'll just kind of save them all up till we get to that point in the lesson. The use of these family terms in verses 1, 4, 13, and there's another one in there that I didn't include up there, could mean that the letter was addressed specifically to a woman that had a particularly good Christian testimony. But I think there's probably a more likely argument to be made that it is referring to a church. In verse 1, the elect lady would be the church that John is addressing. The children, or thy children, in verse 4, would be the church members. And then one of the reasons I tend to lean towards the interpretation of churches is that at the end of the book, John refers to the children of thy elect sister, which could very well be members of another church. And this follows the typical pattern of letters written in the New Testament times where the author said, greetings to all of you at this church, and then signed it from the people at the church where he was. So I do think that it is probably more likely that this refers to churches. And in addition, given the political climate in the late first century, code names were apparently being used for certain things in the church to prevent people from getting themselves into trouble that they could have avoided. John might have chosen to avoid the word church in this case for similar reasons. And the one time that we've already discussed in these series of lessons has been Peter's use of Babylon to refer to Rome, the capital of the empire, not the city of Babylon in the eastern, in Mesopotamia. And it's possible that John also was using this code terminology to protect the people he was writing to. Now let's look at an outline of the book, and if you would, take your Bibles. We're going to read through this book as we go. The book of 2 John. In the introduction, we see that the Apostle John had a great deal of love for this church that he was writing to. And he was also confident that the common bond of Christ would motivate all those who walked in truth to have love for this church as well, because as he taught in 1 John, brotherly love is one of the greatest demonstrations of God's saving work in a person's life. Let's read verses 1 and 2. The elder unto the elect lady and her children, whom I love in the truth, and not I only, but also all they that have known the truth, for the truth's sake, which dwelleth in us and shall be with us forever. And in the normal benediction that comes at the beginning of most of these early church letters, John also wishes that the church will have grace, mercy, and peace coming from God, and specifically in truth and love. Let's read verse 3. Grace be with you, mercy and peace, from God the Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love. That follows the typical form of a letter with an introduction, an addressee, and then also a benediction. We see that many times in the other epistles. Then he jumps right in. It's a very short book, only 13 verses, so he doesn't waste much time and gets right into the topic that he wants to discuss, and that is walking in the way of truth. And this walking in the way of truth has three principles that John is repeating from his epistle, 1 John. The first is the necessity of brotherly love in the church. Let's read verses 4 through 6. I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth, as we have received a commandment from the Father. And now I beseech thee, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment unto thee, but that which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is the love that we walk, and this is love, sorry, that we walk after his commandments. This is the commandment that, as ye have heard from the beginning, ye should walk in it. So the first principle is that we are commanded to love. And this was one of the things that we pointed out was a main theme multiple times in the book of 1 John. The next principle is all about the spirit of an antichrist. The person who does not confess that Jesus has come in the flesh. Let's read verse 7. For many deceivers are entered into the world, who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. And he also repeated the warning. So in 1 John, he says that this is going to be an issue in the future, and he gives a warning against exhibiting the spirit of an antichrist by denying that Jesus has come in the flesh in 1 John. Then also here in 2 John, he gives this warning again, verse 8. Look to yourselves, that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward. The third principle then, following on in verse 9, is the necessity of avoiding transgression. And in this case, the transgression that is specifically referred to is forsaking the faith after the manner of an apostate or an antichrist. Verse 9, whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ, he hath both the Father and the Son. And again, this theme is combined with the spirit of the Antichrist in 1 John. So we have three things that John is repeating from his book that we discussed last week. The commandment to love, the spirit of the Antichrist, and then the need for us to avoid falling to that spirit and transgressing, so that we demonstrate that we have faith. And then the third point that John discusses in this book, it's a very short statement, but it is a very clear statement that Christians, believers, must separate themselves from rebels to the faith. So this is a crucial test that believers must submit all visitors that come to their houses or even to their churches. And if anyone comes to an assembly, he says, and they do not give evidence of having the truth in them, you are not to allow them in. You're not to bid them Godspeed as they leave. You are to completely be isolated from them. Don't even have any part with them. The same thing goes if they come to your house. In that culture, it was more common for people to seek lodging as they were traveling. And if somebody comes and visits you and you know that they are not with you in the belief of God, or that they do not have the doctrine of God, John says that they are not even to give them that hospitality. They aren't supposed to wish them a good day, because doing so is furthering their work of false teaching. Verses 10 and 11. If there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. For he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds. And then the conclusion, John wanted to write more because there was a lot he had to say, but he anticipated that he would soon be able to travel to this church and give them the information directly. Verse 12, having many things to write unto you, I would not with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. And then he concludes with a reference to another elect sister who had children that wanted to greet them. Verse 13, the children of thy elect sister greet thee. Amen. And now we come to an interesting question. Which came first? First or Second John? Because First and Second John have very similar content. Second John is admittedly very, very brief, but a lot of what John says is overlapped in First John. Why would he need to write both books? They both talk about love for the brethren. They both talk about avoiding the spirit of Antichrist, and then they both talk about avoiding transgression, purifying yourself from sin. So it's almost like you have the proverbial question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Now we know in creation, the chicken came first, because God created the chicken, not the egg. But if we look at this, John was exiled to Patmos near the end of his life. We do know that for a fact, Revelation 1:9. Then here that is on the screen. I, John, who also am your brother and companion in tribulation, and in the kingdom and patience of Jesus Christ, was in the isle that is called Patmos for the word of the Lord and for the testimony of Jesus Christ. Maybe, this is just a possibility, it's not something I can say dogmatically again, because there is no way to date these books. Maybe 1 John followed 2 John when John realized that he could not make a visit. We know that John was actively writing when he was sent to Patmos, because that's where he wrote the book of Revelation. Is it possible then that John wrote 2 John while he was still at Ephesus, fully intending to go follow it up with a visit to the church, but then when he was exiled, he wrote 1 John because he realized he wasn't actually going to be able to make the trip? If you look at it that way, the egg did come first before the chicken. But moving on, the second book we are going to look at tonight, 3 John. And the subtitle for this book is Walking in Truth Demonstrated. In this short letter, John congratulated Gaius for displaying a consistent walk in the truth. To whom did he write? Well, Gaius, that's made clear in verse 1. But we don't really know which Gaius this is, because there were many Gaiuses mentioned in the New Testament. One of them was Paul's companion. We'll see that in Acts 19, verse 29, and then Acts 20, verse 4. There was another Gaius who was Paul's host when he wrote the book of Romans in Romans 16:23. And then there was another Gaius who was one of Paul's converts while in Corinth. 1 Corinthians 1:14. Let's look at these verses. Acts 19:29. And the whole city was filled with confusion, and having caught Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel, they rushed with one accord into the theater. Acts 20, verse 4. And there accompanied him into Asia, Sopater of Berea, and of the Thessalonians, Aristarchus and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timotheus, and of Asia, Tychicus, and Trophimus. Those were the references of Gaius being Paul's traveling companion. Romans 16:23. This is referring to Gaius, mine host, and of all the church, and of the whole church, saluteth you. Erastus, the chamberlain of the city, saluteth you, and Quartus, a brother. And then the last one, Paul, in addressing the Corinthians in this first epistle, says, I thank God that I baptized none of you but Crispus and Gaius. I suppose it is possible that this Gaius could be the same Gaius that became his traveling companion. But if he was from Corinth, that's not from Derbe, it doesn't quite match up. So there's as many as possibly three just mentioned from Paul's writings. And here we have another Gaius. Probably this man was one of John's own converts. And we see that in verse 4, which we will look at in a little bit. I have verse 1 up on the screen, but I think we'll just kind of skip ahead here to the important people. Gaius is obviously a very important person in this book. He is the addressee who was walking in the truth. Diotrephes is another important person because he is the opposite of Gaius, also the opposite of the next person. And this was a leader in the church who opposed directly the Apostle John and his authority. The third character, Demetrius, is another man who had a good report among the church. It's possible that he carried this letter. We don't really know. But Gaius and Demetrius both were held up as examples of having good walks in the truth and following God, whereas Diotrephes did not. Just go ahead and flip over a page, and we will look at this book, 3 John. We'll read through it. In the introduction, John once again begins by addressing the man he is intending to speak to, Gaius. The elder, unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Then he continued by praising Gaius' walk in the faith. This was a great demonstration of the health of Gaius' soul, and it caused John to rejoice greatly. And as a matter of fact, for a spiritual father, for John, his spiritual father, the greatest joy that he could have was to hear that his children were walking in the truth. Therefore, the message that he had received concerning Gaius gave him great joy. Let's read verses 2 through 4. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in good health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. And this is one of the reasons why I believe it was one of John's own converts. My children almost seems like it's kind of similar to how Paul addressed Timothy, my son in the faith, someone that was saved under his own ministry. The next section of this book, Gaius' good walk in the truth, was primarily demonstrated in this epistle by his faithful love for the brethren and even for strangers, people who were not believers. Gaius made hospitality for people who were traveling one of his concerns, and his support of them made him a fellow helper in their ministry, verses 5 through 8. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to the strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity before the church, whom, if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. Because that for his name's sake they went forth taking nothing of the Gentiles, we therefore ought to receive such that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. And this walk in truth that Gaius displayed, John now directly contrasts with the corrupting influence of Diotrephes. who loved having a position of power in the church. In fact, this man went so far as to refuse a letter from the Apostle John and the messengers who carried it. And then he went a step further, and if anybody tried to receive them privately, Diotrephes cast them out of the church, verses 9 and 10. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words. And not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. The next thing, continuing on, John holds up another example and says, I congratulate you on your walk. This is what I see as a bad example, or a good example of a bad walk in the truth. And then you see this man, Demetrius. Demetrius has another example of a good walk. John is nearing the end of this letter, but he found it important to include this brief note of recommendation for Demetrius. If he was carrying the letter, that would make sense. Again, we don't know that to be certain, but John did want the church and Gaius to compare this man's testimony with that of Diotrephes. Verse 11 and 12. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. The he that doeth evil is referring to Diotrephes, and the he that doeth good, looking forward in verse 12, Demetrius hath good report of all men and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true. He had a good report. Therefore, they were to follow him. In the conclusion, John once again stated that he had much more to write, but would wait because he planned to come for a visit. Verses 13 and 14. I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we shall speak face to face. Peace be to thee. Our friends salute thee. Greet the friends by name. All right. Back to our interesting question. We asked before how 1st and 2nd John were related. Now, how does 3rd John fit into this picture? If I can, 2nd John mentioned children who were walking in truth in verse 4. 3rd John is addressed to one of John's spiritual children who was walking in the truth. We see that in verse 4. 3rd John also refers to a letter that was rejected, verse 9. Both 2nd and 3rd John indicate that John planned a visit to this church. So, there's a possible solution. You can take it or you can leave it. My thoughts after looking through this. 2nd John was written first. 3rd John was written second when Diotrephes did not allow John's letter to be read in the church. That should say allow, not all. And then before John could make the trip that he anticipated making in 2nd and 3rd John, he was exiled to Patmos, where he wrote 1 John as a thorough discussion of the unwritten topics he referred to in 2 John. Just a thought, a theory. I think it's an interesting reason why these three books are so closely related. Who knows? We'll find out someday. But a key theme that comes up in these two epistles is walk in the truth. They're based on the three central themes of 1 John. We demonstrate our walk in the truth by loving the brethren, not having the spirit of an antichrist, and purifying ourselves from sin. And when believers walk in the truth, it is a joy for their spiritual parents. So walk in the truth. That key theme is also our application. Walk in the truth and do not follow that which is evil. Are you walking in the truth? That's a question as big as your definition of the truth. There's no simple answer to this question because it's something that only you can answer, and the only place you can really answer it is by carefully, the only way you can really answer it is by carefully examining your heart. When we discussed 1 John, we talked about the evidences of our fellowship with God. These are self-tests that we can apply to ourselves and see that we are in fact saved. We won't go over all those evidences right now, but they generally fall into those three categories that we discussed tonight. Last week, our application was to display love for the brethren, so we won't look that much at that much tonight. We'll look more at walking in the truth. Whoops, sorry. So who do you follow? 3 John 11a says, "Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good." Following is an important part of everybody's life. We all follow somebody. Who do you follow? If you are following the world's leaders, and by the world, I am specifically referring to the definition that John gave in 1 John, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. If we're following leaders who are characterized primarily by those three things, also by the absolute absence of godly love, hate for their brother, then we are not going to be in a good place. These men have nothing inside them because they are of the world. They have nothing inside them that works toward the development of godliness. They will not teach you to love brothers because true love is completely opposite to the world system of thinking. They will not teach you to love God because what they love is themselves. We really need to be careful about placing people that are thinking in the world's system of thought. We need to be careful about that kind of person and placing them on a pedestal in our minds as leaders because they are going to lead us wrong as surely as we place them there. Now, if you are following that kind of leader, it's pretty obvious to see because they are evident. The more dangerous kind of leader is the one who is a compromised spiritual leader. If we follow this kind of leader, very soon we too will be compromised spiritually. But how can you tell? Well, if a leader ever instructs you to do something that is against one of these characteristics that God tells us to use as demonstrations of our fellowship with Him, if He teaches us to commit sins, to hate our brothers, to forsake the faith, we know for sure that He is not a good leader. But no leader is perfect. A good leader even falls, and he will still demonstrate that he is walking in fellowship with God if he is a good leader by confessing his sin and getting right with God. It is our job to ensure that we are following the best possible leaders who are going to direct us in the path of godliness. And if you are following good leaders who are trying their best to maintain a good fellowship with God, then they will encourage you to walk in the truth because they will demonstrate this kind of a walk in their own lives. You see, Paul said, "Follow me as I follow Christ." The leaders we choose should be obviously mirroring Jesus Christ in their lives, and this will clarify to us that we should follow them. And how will we know that they are mirroring this image? The only way we can know is by studying the Bible ourselves. Walk in the truth. The truth is in the Bible. That's where you're going to find it. Do not follow that which is evil. I've kind of focused on the following aspects so far in this application, but really, if you know the truth, the temptation to follow the evil things is much less. The primary thing that we should be focused on is knowing the truth. And then even we will become good leaders for those who are behind us. Because as we are following Christ, the people who are coming after us can follow us more effectively. So we have two levels of application. The first is to walk in the truth. And that means that we need to be pursuing God in reading the Bible, praying, meditating on what He says, and we need to not follow that which is evil. We need to make sure that the people we are modeling our lives after are also walking in the truth. Not like Diotrephes, who was wanting to be a proud ruler in the church, but someone who is like a Gaius, someone who is walking in the truth. So our application, I know we are getting out a little bit early tonight, but walk in the truth and do not follow that which is evil. So this is our last lesson for December. Look forward to coming back next year and finishing our series with the book of Revelation. Thank you very much for coming tonight, and let's divide up for prayer.